Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and the vocabulary word for today is caliphate. The short-lived extremist group, formerly known as ISIS, Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, says it has now established a caliphate in areas they control and have changed their name simply to Islamic State. So what is a caliphate anyway? Has any country ever actually been one? What would one really be like in the 21st century? And has the former ISIS really created one? Who wins and who loses in caliphate nation? With us to explain is Fawaz Jurjess, director of the Middle East Center at the London School of Economics and author of books including Obama and the Middle East, The End of America's Moment. Fawaz Jurjess, always a pleasure. Welcome back to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
And to begin at the beginning, what's a caliphate? What's a caliph?
Well, the institution of the caliphate in Arabic, it's an Arabic term called al-khilafa, which is really successor to the Prophet Muhammad when he died. And the idea was the community decided to have a khilafa to succeed the state and the entity that Muhammad built. So the caliphate was established during the full, rule of the successors. And it really, it existed from the time of the death of the Prophet to, you might say, the end of World War I. In 1920s, Turkey, for 500 years, Turkey was the seat of the Islamic caliphate. And the Turkish sultan, leader was basically the caliph, the head of the caliphate. But the reality is, when we talk about the institution of the caliphate, is more of an ideal Weberian type. It's partly myth, partly reality. Because for 500 years during the Ottoman Empire, when the Ottoman was one of the greatest multi-ethnic, multi-religious, multinationalist empire, it was more symbolic than real. And the reality is, for hundreds of years, Muslims basically organized themselves differently, not just under, the caliphate, under various communities, various political and sociological terms. And since World War I, when Kemal Atatürk, the leader of the Turkish nation, got rid of the institution of the caliphate, Muslims are organized now along nation states, separate nation states, and the nation state has become the dominant organizational unit in almost every single Muslim country. So what the Islamic State, has been trying to do is to appeal to the global Muslim community, to appeal to this imagined ideal Weberian type. And if you really, for your listeners, if you want to define what the institution of the caliphate is, it is really the dream, the hope, the wishful thinking of unifying the global Muslim community, the entire Muslim community, the 1.3 million Muslims. It's called Ummah. In Arabic, Ummah means the global Muslim community under a centralized Muslim rule, the caliph. And that's what the leader of the Islamic State, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi now, is the new caliph, the new he's the leader of all Muslims worldwide, and this particular caliphate is basically will be governed by Islamic law, by a Sharia. So imagine this is a highly tall order to basically get rid of the nation states that have existed for almost 100 years and establish one centralized rule governed from one particular place in the world. In this particular case, from Iraq and Syria, where the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria and the Levant is based at this particular historical moment.
Fawaz Jurjess from the London School of Economics. His most recent book, by the way, is The New Middle East, Protest and Revolution in the Arab World. And listeners, anything you always wanted to know about a caliphate or the Islamic State movement in Iraq and Syria, call and ask Fawaz Jurjess or add your own thoughts, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Fawaz, this name change from ISIS or Islamic State in Iraq and Syria to simply Islamic State, is that to suggest that they have set up their own nation that belongs neither to Iraq nor Syria anymore?
Rubbish, Brian. It's more bluster than reality. What Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the so-called the new Khalifa, the new Caliph, his name, by the way, his new name is the Ibrahim, Khalifa Ibrahim. That's the new name of the... What he is really trying to do is to appeal to this imagined type, the global Muslim community, to Muslims who feel basically still attracted to this particular ideal type, the institution of the caliphates. What he's trying to do is to, by shedding his nationalist affiliation, as you said, it was the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant, that is Iraq and the countries in the Levant, particularly Syria, is to basically say, look, I don't believe in this nation state, in this nationalism. I am the only and the only authentic Islamic State that exists in the world. So what he's trying to do is really, basically, it's a major move on his part to try to convince Muslims worldwide, as he said in his speech yesterday, from Indonesia and Malaysia and India and China, that look, and he made it very clear in his speech that democracy and nationalism are Western, alien, decadent Western products. They're un-Islamic. We should organize ourselves under this particular rubric called the Islamic State. So it has an ideological connotation. But the reality is the Islamic State does not really exist except in very small areas in the eastern part of Syria, in particular in an area called the Ar-Ruqqa province and on the Iraqi-Syrian borders, and in the Sunni, Arab-Sunni triangle in Iraq, some of the major cities and towns that they have captured in the last 2 weeks.
And besides militarily controlling them, what are they trying to do to establish this caliphate? I mean, are they telling girls they can't go to school, like when the Taliban set up an Islamist state in Afghanistan, or what?
Well, you know, this is a very good question, Brian, because, I mean, when you talk about an Islamic state, regardless, I mean, what it is, the Islamic state, the leader of the Islamic states, in particular, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the new caliph, the so-called new caliph, and his second-in-command, Abi Muhammad al-Adnani, they don't talk about the institutions, they don't talk about governance, they don't talk about the political economy, they don't talk about how you basically organize states. Basically, this is more of a, let's say, a wishful thinking idea. It does not really, they don't anchor this particular notion or idea in any institutional frameworks. And if you really want to, we have evidence of how they have ruled the areas they control, in particular in Syria and in Iraq. In fact, their extremism make the Taliban look moderate. That's how bad it is, Brian. That is, they are more extreme and more brutal than the Taliban and the parent organization of Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda of Osama bin Laden and Ayman Zawahiri. They celebrate violence. The celebration, they take pride in the violence. They not only kill their enemies and some of their former allies who basically disagree with their tactics, they crucify their former allies. We have many incidents in which not only they basically beheaded some of their former allies who fought with them on the same battlefield in Syria, but they crucified dozens of former supporters. In fact, this celebration of violence, it's not empowerment. You really need a psychiatrist to understand this twisted mindset. It's a form of emasculation. You really cannot understand the brutality that the Islamic State has been carrying out in Syria and Iraq without understanding the psychological, the demons that basically inhabit this particular universe. So even the Taliban, in an area, Ar-Ruqqa in Syria, they control the entire province. I mean, they imposed a reign of terror. Not only girls and women cannot go on the streets. Basically, I mean, it's one of the most rigid form of life. In terms you cannot smoke, in terms you cannot really celebrate life, in terms of that you cannot really have, to smile is basically seen as basically un-Islamic. And that's why, at the end of the day, Brian, if history serves as a guide, I mean, whether you're talking about the Taliban or the Islamic State, they have the seeds of their own destruction because they will most likely alienate the Muslim population, and they have already done so because they do not accept any kind of independence, any kind of sharing power. In fact, they brutally suppress any kind of dissident or any kind of units, any kind of allies who disagree with their own tactics, let alone ideology.
Even a smile is seen as un-Islamic. Why a smile?
Well, it's a very dark chapter, truly, in Muslim history. I mean, in this particular sense, they believe this is, when you talk about the Islamic State, this is not an Islamic state. I mean, forget about the notion Islamic. They try to use and abuse Islamic references. This is a perpetual war. It's a state of terror. That's how it is, because in a way, as in his statement yesterday, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he basically did not talk about ideas. He did not talk about a roadmap. He did not talk about vision. He did not talk about governance. All he said, fight, fight, fight. This is really his worldview. His worldview is basically nourished on persecution, on victimhood, a distorted reading of the Muslim doctrine. And that's why the ideal type is that we have to fight. Not only we have to fight enemies within, we have to fight basically enemies without. And he tried to, yesterday in particular, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he tried to appeal to Muslims outside of Syria and Iraq by saying, look at the persecution that Muslims are experiencing everywhere. And we must basically stand up, take arms. So the smile, the whole idea of smile, that this is a state that needs to be built on blood. This is a state that needs, it's a river of blood, a river of suffering. It's a sweat and toil and blood. And this is the kind of worldview that the new caliphate, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and his inner circle, are trying to communicate to Muslims. And unfortunately, let's not really underestimate their reach. They appeal to a particular group, segment of young Muslim men who are deluded, who basically view the world through this particular lens of victimhood and persecution. And I have no doubts in my mind. I mean, we don't know the exact number of their troops, but we estimate there are about 10,000 fighters in Syria and Iraq. This is a huge number, in particular when you have 5,000 foreigners who have basically migrated and joined the Islamic State. And again, in his statement yesterday, he put a great deal of stress on the need of migration. He talked to about the Muslim community in America, in Europe, everywhere. Muslims must migrate, leave their nationalist countries, and join the only authentic state that exists in the world.
A historical question on caliphates from Alejandro in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Okay.
I would like your guest to contrast this ISIS caliphate to that of the Califato de Cordoba under Abdelrahman the First, Second, and Third. I know it's Abdelrahman, but in Spanish we say Abdelrahman the First, Abdelrahman the Second, Abdelrahman the Third, since they are considered Spanish kings.
The Cordoba Spanish rule at a really, you know, a high point in the history of Muslim rule from a cultural and intellectual standpoint for us.
It really is. I mean, this is what's really sad and tragic about comparing the past glories of Muslim civilization. This was a civilization that expanded. It built great empires, great culture, civilization in terms of education, in terms of learning. And when you talk about the Islamic State, there is no comparison. It is painful to compare, these great empires, Islamic caliphate that existed in history and built great civilization, and the example of the Islamic State. If you look at both the Taliban and the Islamic State, this is really more about brutality, more about a dark vision of the world. This is a dead end, you cannot really, we don't have any particular ideas. That's what I'm saying when we talk about the Islamic State. They have not given us any kind of ideas, of worldview, a roadmap, a blueprint. There's nothing. the worldview is basically inhabited by more and more violence and brutality and expansion. Even though, to be fair, in his statement yesterday, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, or the new Khalifa Ibrahim, he called on Muslims from all over the world with basically skills in education, in particular judges and attorneys, to come and migrate to the Islamic State. But there's no comparison. There is no vision whatsoever. This is a very brutal group of people who are using blood and terror in order to expand. In fact, if you want to delve deeper into their worldview, they want to destroy the existing institutions. I mean, look, you asked me, Brian, what they have done. Not only they have imposed a reign of terror in Syria and Iraq, they have been destroying churches, they have been destroying basically mosques. In fact, they celebrate the fact that all kinds of achievements in terms of art, in terms of culture, some of the greatest poets and philosophers, basically their statues, the first thing that they've done is to destroy these cultural icons inside Syria and Iraq. And this tells you about this twisted mindset. Yes. So you cannot compare the greatest examples in history to this particular group of brutal people. They call themselves the Islamic State.
Wow. That's all I can say is wow.
It really is wow, Brian. It truly is. This is a dark, social parasite. The big question really is why. What explains the resurgence, the emergence of the Taliban, of the Al-Qaeda family, of the Islamic State, of the Al-Nusra Front in Syria, of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula? This is the big question, because if we talk about the institution of the caliphate, we miss the big picture. I think these are symptoms. The so-called, these political extremist groups, whether you talk about jihadism or tribalism or sectarianism, are symptoms of a greater structural crisis in the Arab world. What we're talking about, Brian, here, and you and I, we have discussed this for the last 13 years, we're talking about failed states. We're talking about a developmental failure. You're talking about political authoritarianism in many countries in the Arab and Muslim world that basically has bled society dry. You have fragile institutions, you have economic and cultural decline, you have foreign interventions that have done a great deal of damage. The immunity systems of many Arab and Muslim states has become vulnerable. So you have social parasites like the Islamist State and Al-Qaeda infiltrating this weakened immunity system. And that's the only way. This is an institutional and a structural crisis that really tells you a great deal about the challenges facing this part of this world in the next 10 or 20 years at least.
Fahid in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Fahid.
Oh, hi. Thanks for picking up my call.
Sure.
Oh, firstly, my question to the analyst is, which religion does it belong to? And secondly, as a specialist who knows a little bit about the topic, he is supposed to criticize from several points of view, like evaluate the pros and the cons of the matter. He has just been criticizing the group so far. Like, he's been so emotional about the topic and not being academic.
You're right. You're right.
Go ahead.
In fact, I am a bit emotional because when I look at these particular groups and I look at their action and I look at their conduct and I look at their brutality and I look at their crucifixion of their allies, not only enemies, when I look at how they act, how they try to destroy the few cultural icons that exist, how they treat women, when I look at their twisted mindset, I become very, very emotional. I care deeply about this part of the world. And yes, probably I'm talking more as a human being than an academic. As an academic, I have to find comparative. I can't, in the Muslim world, in the Muslim history, the only way really I can compare the Islamic State and the Taliban is to Al-Khawarij, the heretics that existed in the early parts of the Muslim history, where violence was, the dominant feature, the dominant instruments of their behavior. If they have any ideas, if they give us some ideas, some nourishment, if they tell us that they have a vision for the future, then I can really talk about them in an academic terms. The only way I can talk about them is that I see violence, I see bloodshed, I see reaction, I see extremism. That's what I see. And that's what I, you know, try to get to you and hopefully to other listeners as well.
Well, folks, a wake-up call if you needed one from Fawaz Urzesh, Chair of Contemporary Middle Eastern Studies and Professor of International Relations at the London School of Economics and the author of many books on Islamist radicalism and other related subjects. His most recent book is titled The New Middle East, Protest and Revolution in the Arab World. Fawaz, thank you and wow.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we'll head into the July 4th weekend on a much lighter note next. The Internet versus Long Island Hotels. Matt Chabon from The Times on the effects of Airbnb and Craigslist, the peer-to-peer vacation economy on Hampton's Holiday Nation. Stay with us.